Back here on Back on the Field on WakeUpCallDT.com with Robert Drummond, NFL alum, Syracuse alum, and also an alum of the CFL, Canadian Football League, playing up north. A little bit bigger of a field and a few more players out there. Rob, how are you doing today?
Pretty, how's it going, Dan?
I'm doing very well. Now, you and I had our roundtable discussion, which went well, coming out to that Carvel DeWitt event that we had Sunday with a Sunday, so appreciate that as always. We talked about a lot of different topics, and today I want to get a little bit more into those topics for the NFL, but first I want to go to Syracuse and discuss that game against South Florida, and I've had the opportunity to see it, saw how Syracuse performed in the first half, and obviously in the second half they were so much stronger. What does it say about this team's resiliency at this point in the season that they were able to go from such a bad first half and then score 34 points in the second?
You know, it shows integrity, and the fact that Syracuse has confidence and they're starting to believe in themselves and they can get better. You know, to be in a situation with a hostile crowd on a road, you know, away from the confines of what's comfortable to you, which is Syracuse University, you know, and go out there and come from behind and win a game against a good South Florida team. That's a big win for Syracuse, a very, very big win, and hopefully it can propel them and springboard them to the rest of the season.
What does it say about this offense? Because we've talked about a studded offense, an offense that kept sputtering but couldn't really get started. In the last 2 weeks, they've scored 77 points. So what have you seen from them?
That shows they're a very, very capable offense, and right now they're just starting to hopefully hit their stride. You know, I said before, you establish a ground game, you can establish a lot of things to do things with an attitude as an offense. And it just seems like that's what Syracuse is starting to do. Right now they're just starting to go out there and just play, relax, and just play SU style of football.
You look at a guy like Jerome Smith, who throughout the season really has never had a bad game, but it looks like he's getting more trust now from the offensive side. Nathaniel Hackett, okay with giving him the ball repeatedly. Even though they struggled in the first half, he still looked good. What can you say about Jerome Smith?
You know, he just turned on. I think he's a very, very calm, very, very good back. You know, he's very, very talented, very big, very strong. He's a very determined and aggressive runner. That's what you need to be a very, very successful back in college football as well as the pros. You know, you just have to go out there and have a lot of confidence in yourself. And it just seems like now Syracuse is really starting to have confidence in their running game and believe in it. And hopefully, as I said before, it can carry them through to a possible, I would say, bowl game, but it's just one game at a time.
And this team now, 4-4 with four games to go. How likely, from what you're seeing right now, is it in your mind that Syracuse will achieve what they need to get to a bowl?
You know, right now, you know, you can't look really down the path or into the future. All you do is just take it one game at a time, and that's how you really have to approach it. But hopefully they can get into a bowl game. But, you know, I don't know. Anything could happen. There could be injuries from Syracuse standpoint. There could be injuries from the other teams they're playing. You know, you never know. So you can just really take it at one game at a time, one week at a time.
What can you say about a team that struggled so much in the early part of the season, then goes into the Big East, and this is their last season in the Big East, of course, but that they're 3-1 through four games? What does that say about this team, and then secondly, what does it say about their competition?
About this team, it says that they're starting to come together now, you know, and they're starting to play well as a team, whereas early on, it just seemed that they would, like, they play in spurts. They're not trying to, well, granted, they had a bad first half, but they learned how to go out there and come from behind and win a football game, and that's very, very big for college football, and college football as well as a pro. But going forward with this team, it's just like, you know, you look at the Big East, their Rutgers went down, you know, there are top 25 teams in the Big East, so it's not going to be easy, but nothing in life is.
When you look at the competition that they face, they've been able to hold Pittsburgh, UConn, and Rutgers under 100 yards on the ground, and then they go in to South Florida, and in the first half it allowed two 100-yard rushers before even the second half was played. They win the game, but what does it say about Syracuse against running quarterbacks? Because I've said this for a while, that against a running quarterback, they've really never had the answer. But in this case, which usually doesn't happen, they were able to win the game.
You know, to me it says, don't believe the hype and don't believe the press clippings. And by that I mean, you know, all week long and all the last few weeks, they've been hearing how good that run defense is. You know, and I guess I think the players started believing in it, started feeding into it, you know, and forgot that actually you have to play the game. You know, in that first half against South Florida, they understood, it's like, you know, wait a minute. Whoa, we're not as good as all these people are saying. You know, we have to go out there and play this game. And they settled down. You know, they got a hold of what they were supposed to do. The offense gelled together. The defense played great late also, you know, and they won that game. So that's all that counts, is a win.
Being on the ground and running the ball yourself, when there's an 80-yard touchdown run where you break a couple tackles and then just outrun the entire defense, when you look at a guy like Lindsey Lamar, He had the defensive line behind him, linebackers grabbing for him and missing. Shamarco Thomas, strong safety, going for his feet, missing, and then outran the rest of the secondary. When a run like that happens, how difficult is it to bounce back as a team? Does that really take the wind out of your sails when you see those big plays?
It's deflating, you know, because you don't really want to like lose a game or get behind in points in the game because of big plays, but they do happen. And when they happen against you, you just have to shake it off. And we always say, just have tough skin, you know, because just because he had that long run doesn't mean the game is over. You have to still go out there and play the game. And that's what Syracuse did. And it showed they can fight through adversity and be able to go out there and come from behind late in the game and win the game. So that's what they're gonna be, that's what Doug, I know, for a fact, is going to build off after winning that game last week.
Playing with Coach Marone for a season when he was a senior and you were a freshman, and Doug Marone on the offensive line, what can you say about him as a player that would help him as a coach? Was there resiliency with him as a player?
There was resiliency. I mean, I was a little bit young back then, you know, because I was only 18 years old, and then Doug was a fifth-year senior, you know, so I really tried not to interact with those guys too much because they were much older than me, you know. But it was Coach Marone. Bob Brodsky was also there on that team, you know. And it's just like, as a freshman, incoming freshman, it was just nice to be accepted and just go out there and play as hard as I possibly could, week in and week out, you know. That's all I did. And we ended up going to a bowl game my freshman year, the Cherry Bowl, you know. Wasn't that much of a bowl for everyone back then, but it's like, you know, it's a good feeling being able to go out there with a bunch of seniors who accept you for who you are and just understand that you just like to go out there, work hard, and try and be a part of a team.
Looking at this team where they stand right now at 4-4, we've talked about Coach Marone before. We've talked about, you know, his tenure here and this being his fourth season. If there's not a bowl, does it make more sense to transition into something new, or does this team under Coach Marone at this point show enough resiliency that you'd say he's worth having back?
You know, me personally, I think he's worth having back, you know, because I see things turning around. The thing that scares me a little bit is that we're going into a tougher conference now. It's the ACC now. And we are a lot more athletes, a lot better athleticism, you know, and so it's just that. It's going to be interesting to watch these last couple of weeks, you know, because Syracuse really has their work cut out. But you know what? I think they're capable of doing it. I see them turning around, and hopefully they can go out there, you know, and do the things they need to do to get better going to the future.
This team in the ACC right now, if I was to lift this team up out of the Big East and drop them in the ACC, how successful do you think they'd be based on what you've seen?
That's tough to say, you know, because it's mentally, I think they're not where they need to be right now. But athletically, I think they can compete with anybody in the country. But they just have to believe in themselves, you know. And you see them playing, and you see them do that in spurts. But you need to do that for a full 60 minutes in order to win games. I mean, consistently in collegiate football.
Now, I brought the number 44 jersey here today. You obviously played running back, and we'll talk about your number in a couple minutes here. But the number 44, using it as a recruiting tool to give to a freshman and say, we want you to continue the history if you're Syracuse, even Floyd Little, who's now working for Syracuse, to hand that jersey to a freshman, agree or disagree?
I disagree. I mean, it's just like the NFL draft. Okay, the Raiders drafted Jamarcus Russell. You know, before he even stepped onto a football field, they gave him $33 plus million, you know, before he even did anything. You can't just, bestow upon an incoming freshman that much pressure, you know. It's for the simple fact is, like, young man, you've done nothing yet. Yet we're going to put this great number on your back and expect so many great things from you. That's a lot of pressure on a freshman. Now, after their second, third, and even going to your senior year, if they deserve the right to wear that jersey, then you approach that person, explain that to them, where you could be like honored with wearing the grade 44 for a senior year. But I don't believe an incoming freshman. They should use it as a recruiting tool in order to get a player to come in.
So you think that, not recruiting-wise, but based on bulk of work, if you're able to perform and you see that maybe this is a 1,000-yard back every season, or, you know, one of the biggest parts of the offense that going into junior season or going into their senior season, that could be something to give to them. And, you know, I mean, if that were the case, it could help Syracuse in keeping these players for another year to know that they could wear that jersey.
But the thing with the number 44 at Syracuse, it signifies greatness. Look at the number of the guys who won the number 44 at Syracuse before. Were they all great or just good? Big difference. That number is legendary and honorary here at Syracuse. And just to give it to an average player, I think it's not right.
And I definitely can agree with you for that, that when you see that it was worn by Jim Brown, it was worn by Ernie Davis, Floyd Little, and all the way up to Rob Conrad. And Rob Conrad, even a very successful player in Miami, be it blocks at times or touchdowns in different situations, you know, he definitely proved that he deserved wearing that jersey. Now, a friend of yours has worn the jersey on the other side, on the hard court for basketball, and John Wallace. The number 44 has meant so much to football for Syracuse, but being at Syracuse, has that trailed off into basketball? And you see that Derek Coleman wore 44 and Wallace wore 44. So is there a significance to the number in general on campus?
There's a very big significance to the number in general on campus. You know, it's a number that always goes down, like you said before, with Wallace and Coleman and Brown and Little, you know, and Davis. You know, it's just a number that everyone knows. You signify, when you think of Syracuse University, no matter what it is, you think of 44.
Do you ever regret not having the opportunity to wear it?
A number doesn't make the man. The man makes a number, you know. So I never want to be like someone else. I always got to try and go out there and be a trendsetter and do things the way I tend to do them and the way I like to set the standards for myself. And I never like to follow in anybody's footsteps, because I can create footsteps for myself, because that's what drives me and forces me to work hard. So that's what I always believe in football.
Number 36. That's the number that you wore at Syracuse. What is that number? And you saying being a trendsetter and having your own, being the man that makes the number, not the number that makes the man. What is number 36?
To me, it was just a number. I really like Reuben Mays when he was at LSU, you know, and then when he played for the Saints, you know, it was just a number that just, I like the number 3 and I like the number 6. I also like the number 25, and I also like the number 2, you know, but it's just, as I said before, a number did not signify how I played on the football field. When I walked into the football field, I was myself. I just believed in me wholeheartedly, and I just went out there and just gave 100%. And it didn't matter if I ever had number 99 on or if I had number 4 on. I was going to go out there and play as hard as I can, you know, and the number was just a number to me.
Now let me ask you, getting back to 44, with a number being just a number, but you saying that 44 signifies greatness, would you be for or against just taking that number and leaving it in history for good and not even having the senior season? I know we talked about, based on performance, that they could bring the number out. But would you rather see it gone completely, or would you still look at it as maybe a senior tool?
I'd rather see it gone completely, but I'd be open to the fact that all the guys who've worn the number, you know, over the years who made it great, you know, taking a vote and being able to agree with their vote. They decided a guy did well enough his first 3 years that he can wear it in senior year, and they said yes, I'd be okay with that.
Looking at a guy who's really performed for Syracuse and maybe deserving of wearing this number, but he'll be gone after this year, is Ryan Nassib at number 12. And obviously he's not a running back, but someone who is on pace to break every single record of any quarterback in Syracuse history, has already broken a bunch of records, and a guy who obviously will be looking forward to the NFL. From what you've seen from Ryan Nassib, how good can he be in the bigger game?
He's got so much upside right now, and I've said that years ago. That kid's going to be one heck of a player. He's a very, very good player now, but when he finally gets good, he's going to open up a lot of eyes and surprise a lot of people. I see a bright future for that young man.
What could he do in the NFL? Do you see him as that pocket passer? Do you see his ability to run? Where do you see him?
It was funny. I was talking about it to a bunch of gentlemen this morning about it. I see him as possibly being someone who can be of that Tom Brady stature when Tom Brady came out. Not much respect to Tom Brady, but Tom Brady was a hard-nosed quarterback that had a very, very strong arm, that had the complexity to sit there and learn and understand the game, and look how he took off. Ryan Nassib has a bright, bright future ahead of him.
And you talk about Tom Brady and Ryan Nassib. We talked about numbers. They both wear number 12, so looking at that. But with Ryan Nassib moving forward, could you see him, let's say he makes it to the NFL, could he be a starter within his first couple seasons, or do you think this is a man who needs to be on the bench, needs to learn the game, and then go forward?
I think all rookies really need to learn the game, but I mean, be on the bench and go forward. But, you know, you get these guys nowadays to come into camp early, and they learn their playbooks and, you know, and understand that. Plus, Ryan Nassib is a very, very good student, you know, on and off the field. So I can see him coming in right away starting as a rookie.
And what makes you believe in him? What is it about his technique or the way that he views the field? I know we talked about that he's a student of the game and that he understands it well, but when you see him on the field, what stands out to you most that makes you think that Ryan Nassib should be in the NFL?
Nothing fazes him. I mean, he can shrug things up and go on to the next play as if it didn't even bother him. And that for a quarterback, is a blessing to have, because a lot of quarterbacks have no head. They throw an interception, or if they have a fumble, or if they have something, they're constantly thinking about it. You look at Ryan Nassim, and he has the poise out there. He has a character control out there. Nothing bothers him, and that's very, very big for a quarterback.
What game of his stands out the most to you this season? Is it the South Florida game and his ability to be resilient, to come back, and to score in those last few seconds?
It is the South Florida game. You know, the South Florida game, that last drive really showed who Ryan Nassib was. You know, all the pressure and emphasis is on the quarterback at one point, because that's who everyone's watching. And he just went out there with calm, cool, and collected, drove downfield, you know, and they won. It takes a lot for a quarterback to be able to do that. A lot of confidence in himself, a lot of confidence in his player, a lot of confidence in his ability. And he just went out there and just performed. And that's Ryan Nassib.
We talk about Ryan Nassib going out there and performing, but going to the NFL, there's a quarterback that's going out there and not performing. And the record we've talked about before isn't really respectful of the way the team was playing, led by this man, Michael Vick. You and I have talked about it for weeks, so we'll take the credit for this. Now everybody's talking about whether or not Michael Vick should be out there or not. But in your mind, the way that this team is right now, you've said Michael Vick, probably not the guy.
No.
So going forward here, what is it about Michael Vick that hasn't established his leadership in your mind?
It's just that he's not taking control of the team. He's a quarterback. He's a leader. You know, and if you just go out there and just watch Michael Vick and just look at his body language. His body language is he doesn't want to get hit anymore. He's tired of just sitting back in the pocket trying to be a thrower, which he is not, and taking all these hits, and the referee's not calling it. He's fed up with it. And if people can't see that, they really don't understand the game of football. It's like, you know, he's a quarterback right now. He's gun-shy. He's throwing quick. He just doesn't want to get hit anymore. He's not a big person in stature. And these hits begin to pile up. And if I really be honest about it, yes, some of these hits are warning and should draw flags, but they're not, you know. But and he's just tired of it. You can just see that. He just needs to take a step away from the game. And by that, I mean he doesn't have to sit down forever. You know, just take a few games off, you know. Let Foley go in there and just see the game from the perspective on the sideline. And then understand what is, oh, you know, maybe I need to do this. And then come around. But for right now, they need to sit him down.
If you sit down a guy like Michael Vick and you bring in a guy like Nick Foles, what are the Philadelphia Eagles organization saying to the team? What are they saying to their fans?
That Michael Vick needs to step up. He's a $100 million quarterback. It's like no one person is bigger than the team. You know, if this is what helps that team of Philadelphia, then so be it. You know, and if at some point Michael Vick can go out there and show that fire and show that spark and win his job back, then great. You know, that's the person we need. But if you sit there and you sulk, you whine, you moan, you groan, you don't complain, you don't want to get better, we're going to trade you. There's no one person that's bigger than any football team.
I think one thing that I'm seeing with Michael Vick is the fact that maybe he doesn't appreciate where he is right now.
Yes.
You know, he's gotten the opportunity, but maybe you don't appreciate it. When you see his body language, when you know the mistakes that he's made off the field, when you look at a guy like Michael Vick, in your honesty, and obviously you're not best friends with the guy, you know, you're not sitting down talking with him every day, but from what you do know, from what you do see, from the path he has taken, is this a guy that you think at this point in his career is going to wake up?
No. I don't think he's going to wake up. I just think he's just fed up with the whole dog controversy, with the whole taking of the hits, with the whole everything. He's just fed up. He got the $100 million contract, and that's something as we always talked about. It's just doesn't seem like it's worth it to him, you know. And I tell everybody who disagrees with me, just watch his body language. You know, no one can hide away from the body language. And his body language is out there like someone who's on fire, someone who's ready to rev up the team, somebody ready to go out there and win championships and win games after game. He's just not. It just seems like he's shut down.
I think the biggest thing when we talk about Michael Vick is I just picture his hands at his sides and his head cocked to the side, kind of looking like he's bored, he's tired, he's done, he doesn't want to do anymore. You know, that body language that you talk about, I just keep seeing the hands just kind of flailing by the sides, that he doesn't exude that leadership, that want, that need to have something. And the Eagles at this point have to look at the fact that they have an option for that contract. And, you know, we talked about being traded. Where would Michael Vick make sense? What team do you think would take a guy like Vick?
I have no idea right now, because a lot of these teams are setting their young quarterbacks, and Michael Vick's not the type of person to go out there and really teach somebody, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what team would really take on a player like Michael Vick and all the baggage he brings.
Now, you being a Philadelphia player and also being a fan of Philadelphia, following the team, Nick Foles, a rookie, What about him makes you, because we've talked about him before and your belief that he could be out there, what is it about him that you think would be good for the team? I mean, obviously Vic's making his mistakes, but aside from Vic, What does Foles do right?
He's hungry. And look what he did in the preseason. I mean, he wants to go out there and prove these teams that he's capable of being that man, you know, and give him the opportunity. If he fails, he's only a rookie, you know, so you can put him back in there and let him learn. But I have a feeling that he's not going to fail. He showed in the preseason what he can do as a player. He's a very, very heady player, very smart player, and he's determined. And you need that in a quarterback.
You know, I have to ask you this. Donovan McNabb obviously came from Syracuse, played for Philadelphia. Philadelphia lets go of Donovan and gives the ball to Michael Vick. In hindsight, we always say hindsight's 20/20. Was it the right decision to let go of McNabb when they did and give the ball to Vick, or should it have been maybe another season?
I think another season would have sufficed some Donovan McNabb to go out there. But, hey, you know, that's why I'm on the outside. You know, they're the organization right there on the inside. So, you know, I would have given him one more season if I was general manager or the owner.
Are you sad to see that McNabb isn't out there? Do you think that he had anything left in the tank? Because to me, in Minnesota, he wasn't given a fair shake. There were a lot of injuries. Percy Harvin was his best bet, and Percy Harvin had his troubles. And in Washington, I don't think Mike Shanahan and the team were ever behind him. So
I think the game passes everybody by, you know. And just watching Donovan over the past couple of years, I think he was starting to lose, you know, the context of what the game was about, and he'd lose his ability. So it was time for him to get out of the game, you know, like with his life and limb, I say, you know, because, you know, it was time for Donovan to sit down.
Now, we talked about big contracts. Victor Cruz on the New York Giants, he had that one good season last season. Everybody knows the salsa now. Right now, he is structuring a new contract. Mm-hmm. Over, under, what are the chances that Victor Cruz follows what we've been talking about and gets that max deal, gets a big contract, and all of a sudden Victor Cruz isn't doing the salsa that much?
Time will tell. Wait till you get the contract, then we'll see. You know, like I said, your body language you can't hide from. Once you're comfortable in your life with all that money and everything, we'll see what happens with Victor Cruz. He's another one we can watch and see what happens.
Of the two Johnsons, Calvin Johnson and Chris Johnson, Calvin wide receiver for Detroit, and obviously Chris running back for Tennessee, which one of those two gentlemen, the way that they've been playing, and we talked about big contracts and not performing well after you get them, which one of these guys do you think will have a better season going forward?
I think Calvin Johnson will have a better season going forward because he's more professional off the field, whereas Chris Johnson to me is more of a, in it, like, just hidden, just like, you know, had to wear the gold teeth, all about the image, whereas Calvin Johnson and that. Calvin Johnson's a true prototype player, you know. He's a gentleman player is what I call him. So I think Calvin Johnson will have a better season going forward.
Now let's go into Halloween because obviously people are going to be celebrating. Obviously with the hurricane and everything that's gone on with Sandy, some people have to put this off for a little while. But costume-wise, what was the best costume that you ever had in your mind?
I think the best costume I ever had was the Indian Warrior costume I had like years ago at this costume party where I was just dressed up like an Indian chief. And I really liked that costume because it's my heritage also. So this is a costume I really liked and I really wanted to wear. And that's the best costume I can think of personally I've ever worn.
Now you said that was part of your heritage. What is your heritage?
I'm a Seminole Indian also. And my great grandfather was Indian.
So you're a Seminole Indian.
Correct.
And Syracuse would be in the ACC. Yeah. So Florida State, Syracuse, who are you cheering for?
I never go against my orange.
Now, when you look at going into this Halloween season, what are the best costumes that you like to see? I mean, is it something like with Demaryius Thomas, wide receiver for Denver, he's dressing up as a replacement ref.
Yeah.
Costume like that. Do you like to see the sports-related costumes, or do you like to get away from it and see something else?
I like to see the sports-related costumes. You know, it's for the kids. You know, it's a game. It's entertainment. You know, granted, they go out there and they play hard like Warriors. They play as hard as they want, you know. But, you know, it's to impress the kids and improve upon the kids. You know, it's about, what, having fun with life. You know, and I like seeing that.
And the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about is D'Angelo Hall. He's stating now, and obviously when you see the tape, it looks like he's swearing at the ref. He's getting really upset with the ref, takes his helmet off. Now, he said that he would like to see a tape the other way because he says that, you know, the ref was saying stuff to him, that there was a play on him before by Emmanuel Sanders where Emmanuel had thrown him to the ground, Mike Shanahan saying that this was a wrestling-type move that was done on D'Angelo Hall. When you see the tape from D'Angelo Hall and knowing, you know, being in the NFL, do you really believe that there is two sides to the story, or do you think that, you know, maybe this is just a guy who got a little bit carried away?
Look at D'Angelo Hall's past in the history of D'Angelo Hall. He's not like a Christian out there. I mean, D'Angelo Hall, but in his defense, when I played, I've had some referees swear at me also, you know. So you tend to believe, if someone had a good character, you tend to want to believe him, but with D'Angelo Hall, it's hard to believe.
So you think in this case it's kind of the boy who cried wolf?
I saw it in Hansville Hall saying the F word. I know what the F word looked like. Anyone can see what the F word looked like, but it's like, I think it's a boy crying wolf.
And then, you know, on your side, you said, you know, you've had refs out there swear at you. When that's never really seen, and you know, you don't see a referee until they get out on the field and they call the penalty and whatever that may be, not knowing that part of the game when you're watching it, when you're on the field and you're dealing with that, is it difficult to plead your case knowing that most people can't see what the refs are saying?
It is, but, you know, the game is a game. You know, just go with your call, take your licks and wounds, and just go on and play the game. Stop worrying about this off-the-field stuff, stop worrying about this referee stuff, and just play the game for what it is and then go on. You know, mistakes are going to be made. No one's perfect, and that's the way I always approach the game. So some people don't.